This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. For the past 4 or so months, we have done several shows about the Democrats' major education, healthcare, and climate package. Well, this morning, it finally passed. The vote was 220 to 213. Not one Republican voted in favor of the bill. Just one Democrat, Representative Jared Golden of Maine, joined Republicans in opposing the package. The package would increase child care assistance, fund universal pre-K, reduce prescription drug costs, expand Medicaid coverage to cover hearing aids, increase investments to fight the climate crisis, and more. The bill now moves on to the Senate, and so many people are wondering what is going to happen. Will senators now gut the bill? Joining us with the latest is Arthur Delaney, senior reporter for HuffPost, where he covers politics and the economy. Hi, Arthur. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, the House, House Democrats, we should say, finally passed this bill. Arthur, can you just remind us, this bill has gone through a lot of iterations. Senator Bernie Sanders, we got to say, he's been fighting for his life for so many of the provisions in this bill. He is chair of the Budget Committee. Initially, he asked for $6 trillion. It was brought down to $3 trillion and then brought down again to $1.3. So just give us some of the highlights when you look at what has changed over the months.
Well, they're still fighting over it. It's not done yet. And even the progressives who want more in the bill recognize that some of the stuff they added to the House version that passed today is going to get taken out in the Senate. And they're still fighting over a bunch of the tax stuff. So it's really a mess. And it's been kind of a mess the whole time. It's a lot like when Republicans rushed to pass their tax cut bill at the end of 2017, a similar time frame, and probably this time around, an even sloppier legislative process with most of the negotiations being done behind closed doors and actually fewer committee markups. This time a markup is when a committee approves parts of a bill. And it's just like you said, though, they started big. And there's been a process of attrition, but they didn't get rid of as much as they might have. Instead, they did more programs with shorter durations. For instance, one of the most important parts of it, a child tax credit that pays pays the vast majority of parents in America, will only be in there for 1 year. So they'll have to fight over it again this time next year. And that saved money for them to keep a bunch of other stuff like the universal kindergarten, the child care subsidies, a lot of the green energy tax credits, and so forth.
You know, as you know, Arthur, on this show, we like to talk about what's actually in the bill. And from the beginning, we've repeated that this is a 10-year bill. And it's over 10 years, I should say. So at this point, because so many of the policies in this bill will really transform lives. So people who are following this wondering, okay, will my drug costs come down? I live in the South and I don't have health care because my Republican governor has refused to expand Medicaid. Am I going to finally get Medicaid? Will my child be able to go to pre-K? Will my child care costs come down? What is actually being negotiated? What could be taken out at this point?
Well, the stuff you described is stuff that's in. So universal pre-kindergarten is in, and they put it in for 6 years, which is a longer duration than most of the other stuff in there. And the only reason that wouldn't reach anybody is if a Republican state simply refused to take the money. And even if that happened, a locality within a state could get grants instead, and that would be for setting up traditional pre-kindergarten, pre-K 3, pre-K 4 classrooms, or it could be for just continuing or opening up more Head Start type classrooms. But given the way education is going right now in education politics, I can easily imagine some states not taking that money and not implementing those programs. So that could be a mess. I don't know.
Republican governors, you don't think they'll take the money for pre-K?
Well, I'm going out on a limb because this is actually not an area cover, but I'm just paying attention to what Republican members of Congress are saying. And one of their, they talk about this bill with overarching criticisms of what's happening in politics and what Democrats are generally up to. And education, especially after the Virginia governor's race, has been one of the top ones. And so I would be sort of surprised if after they spent all these weeks saying Democrats are trying to do a federal takeover of education and indoctrinate your children and control your whole life, that they all just quietly accepted this pre-K funding. But shoot, maybe they will. I'm just imagining this is another area where there's a big surprise in the federalist concept of having the states take charge of a policy that's administered at the federal level doesn't work out the way Democrats anticipated. That happened with unemployment benefits this summer. That happened with Obamacare after 2010.
Right. Well, yeah, you're right, Arthur. I'm sure listeners are saying, why would you be surprised? I mean, if they're not going to expand Medicaid to some of the, you know, I hate the word poorest, but people who cannot afford basic health care. I think when you were on, I was talking about this New Yorker piece by AL Press, which I'll never forget it. Every time we talk about this bill, that women in the South, because they don't have health care, they're learning that they have cancer, but they're learning too late. And if they have Medicaid, they can finally go get preventative care. I mean, that's the thing about this, Arthur. So many aspects of this are just going to be life-changing.
Yes, and for low-income people, this does create more access to health care for people who live in those 12 states that didn't expand Medicaid. Mm-hmm. It also expand subsidies for people of medium incomes who are just in a tough spot with regard to buying health insurance on the private market because they're not covered by an employer. So there is a major life-changing stuff in there. A lot of it is unfortunately really complicated. I think the pre-K is one of the easier ones to understand. And I think the child tax credit, you know, monthly cash payments for parents is the easiest to understand. And that's one reason I focused on it so much. I think it's pretty compelling.
Yeah. And Arthur, you've done great reporting on that. You've already reported on how the child tax credits have already had such a massive impact. Can you talk about that?
Yes, it's already slashed poverty. It was a dramatic, like 30% reduction in poverty in each of the several months since the payment started in July. Almost everybody just automatically gets this money. One sort of disappointing thing is that because they're doing this as a tax credit through the IRS and the IRS doesn't know how to reach people who don't file taxes, a lot of people who are poor and therefore not required to file taxes aren't getting the money. And so the poverty reduction is not the 40% that Democrats had initially advertised. It's more like 30%. But I've spoken to a lot of people who are getting that money, and for them, it's great. You know, I interviewed a woman in Washington State she had two kids and she's getting $550 a month, and she had the third baby. Her husband took time off to help take care of the baby, which is, you know, a normal good thing to do. And they just had no money for a month except for these monthly tax credit payments. So it's a big deal and people are already relying on it. And I think the big question is, will this affect politics? Like, will this benefit Democrats? Will the rhetoric around it change? Will Republicans try to kill it? Last night, Kevin McCarthy, the leader of Republicans in the House of Representatives, really came out against this entire policy. And I think it will be interesting to see whether it's something that is a focus of the campaigns next year.
Arthur, the other question is, and we're going to talk more about what's in the bill, but I'm noticing most headlines today are House passes this bill. The fact is, not one Republican voted for this. Did that surprise you at all? Did you expect maybe a few would vote for it?
No, nobody expected any Republicans to vote for it. This is not like censuring a Republican congressman for, you know, making a murder cartoon against one of his colleagues. It's not like impeaching Donald Trump. On economic stuff, Republicans are mostly the same as ever. And it's true what Democrats say, that this is transformative and a big deal. It's just not the kind of thing Republicans want to do unless there's a Republican president. Of course, they did support a couple multi-trillion dollar bills when Donald Trump was up for re-election. They supported direct payments to everybody in America when they were the incumbents in the Senate and the White House. And now that they're not, they thrive on chaos, and the worse things get, the better it is, the better their outcome could be next November.
Well, I hope this really gets attention in the coming days, because not one Republican voted for this transformative bill. Today, we're joined by Arthur Delaney, senior reporter for HuffPost, who has been on this, especially the child tax credit. Again, House Democrats voted this morning for the major education, healthcare, and climate package. We've been covering this for months. It has been watered down. There are still many, many important policies in here. But, you know, people like Bernie Sanders say they're going to still fight to expand Medicare to cover dental and vision, because that got dropped. But Medicare will still cover hearing aids. And can you give us more info about the ability for the U.S. government to negotiate drug prices for Medicare?
That's in there, and it will save like $300 billion nationally over 10 years, meaning it's a major chunk of the revenue raised in the bill. And it's not just for people on Medicare. These price reductions will benefit everyone who buys drugs. I believe, for example, that insulin prices would go down as a result. The mechanics of the Medicare negotiation, I must admit, my colleague Jonathan Cohn is a little more expert on those. But even though this isn't the ideal version of the policy that Bernie Sanders wanted in the first place, I think Democrats are pretty happy with it. It's not the fully watered down version either. It's a legitimate compromise between the moderates and the liberals within the party. It's I think the most popular thing when pollsters are just asking people, how do you like the sound of Medicare negotiating lower drug prices? It's like 80% of people say yes, they love that. It's even more favorable than taxing the rich, which has been popular forever. So whether this benefits Democrats next year is a huge question now. They were so happy this morning on the House floor, but everyone thinks they're going to lose control of the House. And you could sort of see it on Kevin McCarthy's face, how a sort of smugness if you watched his 8-hour speech, or even part of his 8-hour speech last night.
Well, Arthur, I mean, it's amazing to think that not one Republican voted for this bill, and yet they're expected to win in 2022. I mean, part of that reason is gerrymandering and voter suppression. But that just begs the question, when will people actually start feeling this bill? When will these policies go into effect?
Well, the child tax credit in January, right away. And a lot of stuff starts next year. But that doesn't mean people are going to be like, oh, Democrats, thank you, I will now vote for you and preserve your majority. It just doesn't necessarily translate into people winning. But I do think that the policies in here will have a direct benefit that people will feel immediately. The child care subsidies, for instance, are designed to limit people's expenses on things like daycare to just 7%. Of your income. That's a big deal. It doesn't completely phase in immediately, but a lot of people will benefit from that next year if this gets through the Senate, which it seems like it will, but that is kind of another question mark we got right now.
Yep. Representative Pramila Jayapal was on MSNBC last night saying that she's pretty certain that they have 51 votes in the Senate. And I was wondering, who's the Republican that's going to vote for this?
Well, there's no Republican will, but the 51st vote comes from Vice President
Kamala Harris.
The Vice President counts as the President of the Senate. That is a cool ceremonial. I guess it's more than ceremonial. So that's how that will go down. But Joe Manchin hadn't said yet that he's going to vote for the bill. So they haven't got 50 commitments from the Democratic caucusing senators to vote for it. It's still a little uncertain, but Jayapal said this morning on the Capitol steps that she thinks the Senate will pass it in a week or two.
Wow.
Which I thought was a little surprising. Manchin has he said a lot that he wants to slow things down. So I don't know if he wants it to drag into next year. He might not.
Today, we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, a senior reporter for HuffPost, about the Democrats' major education, healthcare, and climate package. Democrats voted for this morning, House Dems. No Republican voted for this bill. And if you have any questions for Arthur about what's in it, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. So what are you hearing, Arthur, given that this is going to be negotiated in the Senate over the next couple days for people who live in states, maybe in Manchin state, Sinema state? I mean, what's at stake at this point?
One big thing that House Democrats put in there is a paid leave provision for parents to take time off from work for child care or health problems. And that's just like definitely coming out. They put it in there because they felt like they didn't want to compromise with themselves. They want to make Joe Manchin kill it. And he will definitely do that. And Pramila Jayapal, who's important because she's the leader of the progressives in the House, she all but said that was okay. They have no red lines, and they're happy that so much of the bill will stay the way it is. But Joe Manchin has been clear that he didn't like that piece and it's going to get removed. I'm not sure what else will be a problem on the social spending side, but we do know there's a big mess on taxes that will get sorted out with Bernie Sanders likely getting his way on cutting down this tax cut for millionaires that they really weirdly have been insisting on including.
Okay, so tell us more about that, because you've got a piece on this. Democrats face moment of truth. Will they give millionaires a tax cut? Tell us more about that.
Don't you think of Democrats as the ones who are always like, we're going to tax the rich? It's good politics. You know, everyone likes that. That's a popular idea in polls going back decades. But in this bill that they just voted on, they bring back a deduction for state and local property taxes that Republicans put a $10,000 limit on in their tax bill. And that really harmed some households in states that have high taxes to pay for like high social services in New York, New Jersey, California. And they're lifting the cap to $80,000 in this bill. It mostly benefits really rich people. Like the vast majority of the benefit goes to people with $1 million annual incomes. And these Democrats just don't care that it's totally contrary to their messaging. They don't care that it results in the bill giving millionaires a net tax cut, even with all the other tax hikes that they put in there. And Bernie Sanders has been like, listen, we can have this deduction. Just exclude millionaires from it. Put an income limit on who can get it. And I suspect that the Sanders alternative to the House bill is what they'll ultimately do. But it's been a real ugly way of doing policy for Democrats, because they've got a totally contradictory message right now with the tax proposals in the House bill.
Right. Well, and another reason for people to say that they're just out of touch.
I think this is like, I have heard this from multiple people. Like, this is exactly why I'm cynical about Democrats being the working man's party, that they can't stop hugging millionaires. And honestly, with the tax stuff in the House bill, that is a you are right to be cynical about that. But Democrats as a whole, I think, because of Bernie Sanders in the Senate and getting Bob Menendez to agree with him on this, they will probably go with the no millionaires version of that tax deduction. And Pramila Jayapal, she was just like, yeah, I think the Senate will take care of that for us. So they're trying not to fight each other too much, the progressives in the high tax state, Democrats like Josh Gottheimer from New Jersey and Tom Suozzi from New York. It's going to be Bernie Sanders who carries the day, I think. And if they don't, that's a real mess. That's giving a tax cut to the rich if they don't let Bernie Sanders win that one.
Well, let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Mary in San Francisco. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
I'm a 70-year-old. I'm on Social Security, and I'm already on Medicare and Medicaid. And what I want to know is, will any of this 2,100 pages do something about increasing our actual benefit amount? Now, we're going to get something because of the inflation and the cost of living, we're going to get something like 5.9% raised in January, but we're not keeping up with wages and with consumer price index and cost of living. And terrible news that our Part B premium is going to be raised to $170 a month. Now, some of us, myself included, going out on disability and now being retired, I actually get under $7 an hour as my income. And Social Security, this is 70 million people. It's a wonderful, basic, universal income, but nobody is specifically talking about it. Mm-hmm. It seems like they're changing the subject to Medicare, Medicaid, drugs, and hearing aids, and we need food. So is anybody going to negotiate? Because Bernie Sanders, the millionaire socialist, doesn't know what it's like to live on a fixed income. He's not on Social Security as his only form of income. So is anybody addressing this? Thank you.
What a great caller. There's a Medicare hearing benefit in the House version of the bill that would start in 2023. And the bill has a limit, a $2,000 cap on people in Medicare's prescription drug programs out-of-pocket costs. The lower prescription drug prices thing takes effect, I believe, in 2025. There's no boost to Social Security benefits besides the one that the caller described that's kicking in next year just because of the annual cost of living adjustment, which will be the highest cost of living adjustment I think they've ever done. It's like 6%, but it is just designed to keep up with the prices that are rising out there.
Right. And just like Mary said, my mom said, okay, we're getting a tiny boost to Social Security, but that boost is going to go to the increased Medicare costs.
Yeah. And the annual cost of living adjustment is not like a raise. It's not supposed to feel like a bonus. It's just to cover your costs. So nobody can really, Democrats can't brag about that. And nobody should feel thrilled about it. That's just the law for a long time. But there are those other sort of side benefits in the Medicare parts of the bill.
Well, Mary, thank you for the call. We're actually definitely going to do a show about Social Security because you're right. It's how does anyone live on Social Security every month, especially if that's their main source of income. So thank you for the call. Arthur, for people who want to raise their voices on this bill, what's the time frame? The next couple days, right?
Well, they're both House and Senate are out of town, and then they'll come back after Thanksgiving. And this would probably be the best time to call your congressman because, between now and when they pass it, this would be your chance to chime in. It could be done in as little as 2 weeks. I had thought it would take longer, but that's what one influential member of Congress said this morning. So that's what could happen.
Arthur Delaney is senior reporter for the HuffPost, where he covers politics and the economy and has been tracking the Democrats' major education, healthcare, and climate package bill very closely. Arthur, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And again, House Democrats passed the bill this morning. Not one Republican voted in favor of this bill. And we did get breaking news during the show. In case you missed it, a jury found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on charges related to shooting dead two people at an anti-racism protest in August 2020. And I just want to read a few responses from people on Twitter. Kimberly Crenshaw, executive director of the African American Policy Forum, acquitted all charges. Understand what this means. Barbara Ransby, who's a historian and author of Ella Baker and the Black Freedom Movement. Rittenhouse verdict is outrageous and not shocking given the open bias of the judge, but the verdict is a dangerous one that gives a green light to the new KKK. When cities are forced to limit police powers, vigilantes have historically stepped in to form extra legal lynch mobs. Sherilyn Eiffel, who just stepped down as president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. What a terrible, awful truth about this country has been confirmed again today. And then one more response from Derica Purnell, who has been on the show. Derica is a Guardian columnist and author of Becoming Abolitionists. The whole damn system is guilty. The judge, the jury, the lawyers. When we call for justice in a system that is already guilty of white supremacy, we give it more power. Until we confront that fact, more people will die and their killers will continue to go free. What if justice isn't conferred by a court, but created by building healthy resource communities? What if we weren't satisfied with convictions after death and instead sought justice for the living? What if we fought white supremacy in the streets and the courts? Those are just a few of the reactions that we found on Twitter after a jury found Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on charges related to his shooting dead two people at an anti-racism social justice protest in August 2020 in Kenosha. We will definitely talk more about this next week. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. You can find links to past shows and resources for today's show at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.